Hello, everybody. Today we're going to read session 8. And session 8 is a bit of a difficult session. A lot of this session was removed in the original printing of book 1. Dawn definitely gets very distracted, and we have a lot of focus on conspiracies, term being used loosely, but that's kind of what we're going to be talking about today. And so I'm going to try to do this in the best way that I can, not really feed these conspiracy ideas too much. The book 5 intro had, where if you do not know, the original books were printed in 4 volumes, and then Dawn had crossed out a lot of sessions that he thought were distracting or anomalous or just too personal to include in the books, and that way being distracting. And then about a decade after the original printing, Jim and Carla released all of the excluded questions and answers. And with each session that had exclusions, they had a little intro that they wrote about why they excluded these. And Jim talks a lot about conspiracies and in the book 5 intro for this session, because that's where this session kind of goes. So we're going to be as gentle talking about these things as possible, but we can't just skip over it. It's relevant to the rest of the material. It's relevant to Dawn's experience of the raw contact. And so we're going to go ahead and get started. So we get our typical intro greeting from Ra. I am Ra. I greet you in the love and the light of the infinite creator. I communicate now. Questioner. I have a question about what I call the advertising of the Confederation. It has to do with free will. There have been certain contacts allowed, as I understand, by the Council, but this is limited because of free will of those who are not oriented in such a way that they could maybe want contact. This material that we are doing now will be disseminated. Dissemination of this material will be dependent upon the wants of a relatively small number of people on the planet. Many people on the planet now want this material, but even though we disseminate it, they will not be aware that it is available. Is there any possibility of creating some effect which I would call advertising, or is this against the principle of free will? I am Ra. Consider, if you will, the path your life experience complex has taken. Consider the coincidences and odd circumstances by which one thing flowed to the next. Consider this well. Each entity will receive the opportunity that each needs. This information source beingness does not have uses in the life experience complex of each of those among your peoples who seek. Thus, the advertisement is general and not designed to indicate the searching out of any particular material, but only to suggest the noumenal aspect of the illusion. So, I find this to be a very important quote. Many, many quotes are very important. This is one that I've cited many times in many discussions, have had many discussions about. Dawn is essentially asking, how do we get this out there? How do we disseminate these books? Because there are people out there who are going to want to read them. And Ross says essentially that the people who are going to get benefit from these books will find them. Their life experience will lead them to these books. Not everybody necessarily who wants access to these books is going to have a use for these books in their life experience complex. And that those who would will find it. It will come to them. And I think for probably most people reading this, you have had a series of coincidences and odd circumstances by which one thing flowed to the next that led you to these books. It wasn't just, and maybe it was for some of you, but for most of us, it wasn't just someone coming up and saying, hey, you need to read this book. Maybe more and more with how the internet works and how people have been exposed to the internet. But back in, 1981, when Dawn is asking this question, just going and handing the book out to random people wasn't what Ra thought the best way to quote-unquote advertise. They believe that the proper way to advertise this philosophy is to suggest the noumenal aspect of the illusion. Now, noumenal is the opposite of phenomenal, which is a phenomenon is a physical event that happens, something that can be witnessed with the eyes, and maybe the cause is known, but maybe the cause isn't known, but we can see it happening, we can perceive it with our five senses. That's what a phenomenon is. So the noumenal aspects of the illusion then are the things that happen, the way I understand it, is it's the things that happen through our thoughts, the ways that we don't have necessarily a physical, graspable event that happens, but it's more about how so many things come from our mind and then they happen, or we just perceive them with our mind. So one way that I've interpreted this is, for instance, like when I'm working at a job and I have coworkers, a way that I've taken it upon myself to suggest the noumenal aspects of the illusion is to sort of point out when coincidences happen, when people say something, oh, this might happen, and then it happens, those kinds of things. I would like to point those out and be like, oh, look, we thought this would happen, and then it did happen. And that was the way that I take this quote of how to advertise, quote unquote, very loosely. So to Ra, they're saying that it really isn't helpful to tell people this book has all the answers, this book is so important, this book will save you, blah, 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 because there are so many paths for even for seekers to find what they're looking for. And this book is so niche and so specific and so meant for people on a very specific and strange path that suggesting the book is going to give it to people who aren't necessarily prepared to integrate the teachings. And as we've spoken before about the law of responsibility, some people who aren't really super serious about integrating these teachings might find these books and read these books and not really want to do the work that these books tell you is necessary for your spiritual evolution, but they still retain that knowledge, and that then activates the law of responsibility in their lives. And that's what I think is the free will infringement, essentially. You're infringing upon their free will to go about their lives without integrating these teachings by introducing these teachings to their life. So the interesting thing for me is the odd circumstances and coincidences that led me to the Law of One involved conspiracies, far more than UFOs. I was not led to the Law of One via UFOs. I think that's one of the reasons why I can look at all of the UFO stuff that's in these books very objectively. But my experiences involved, firstly, the surface experiences were that during the time I found these books, I was very into astrology. And I posted on some forums, astro.com was the forums, they don't exist anymore. This was back in 2012, 2013. I was posting on these forums. The people on the forums were also very into Edgar Cayce, which I never really got that into. But there I was also introduced to the concept of channelings from the Michael channelings. And so these things sort of slowly got introduced to me. But a big factor with the Edgar Cayce interest was the David Wilcock aspect, where he had recently published a book talking about how he was the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. Whether or not he is or not, jury's still out. Of course, that's something that cannot be proven. But they tried really hard to prove it. And one of the pieces of proof that they used was their astrological charts. It's something like Edgar Cayce and David Wilcock both have two planets in their synastry chart that are like exactly conjunct in the same degree. And that is a very, very rare chance to have something like that happen, those two planets conjunct. So on the astrology forums, it would come up as, if we could do a reincarnation chart, this is what it might look like. And so it was used as an example, a potential example. It wasn't something that people were super bought into, but it was a curiosity. And one day I was tip-tapping into Google, and I wanted to look at the astrology chart, and I wanted to just kind of look at their synastry chart and compare some things. And so I searched into Google, and I was scrolling on another forum, not the astrology.com forums, just looking for the image of their charts, and I scrolled to the bottom of the page, and there was a post from somebody, and it said, you know, I really love Edgar Cayce, but I'm not sure about David Wilcock and his Law of One stuff. And that was the first time I'd heard the term Law of One, and it was just like a bell went off. It was like ring, 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 ring. And so we know that David Wilcock has a lot of conspiratorial adjacent writings, if we're going to be generous. A lot of his stuff is about conspiracies and hidden agendas and whatnot. And so that's where I went. That's where I found the Law of One. But it wasn't just that either. The other thing that led me to be prepared to receive this was an event that happened in early 2013, and that was the Boston Marathon bombing. And right after the bombing happened, I was watching a press conference with my husband on the TV. They didn't have any suspects yet. The police were talking about what had happened and how they were looking for suspects and how maybe they'd had suspects. They had some suspects on their radar. And a man in the audience of this press conference stood up and said, hey, a bunch of citizens have gathered pictures of the event on a website, and we're looking at all these pictures and we're trying to find potential suspects, and there's a lot of clues, and if you want to help us out to sort out these images, go to this website. And he was able to rattle off the URL. However, he was very quickly dragged out of the press conference by security. And that, like, seemed strange to me. So I went to the website, and it seemed like what they were doing was in good faith. Like, they were really trying to help figure this out, and there was some pretty suspicious things going on. But anyway, this is what started me going into the actual conspiracy rabbit hole, which luckily I didn't spend too much time in, because that rabbit hole is quite dark and quite confusing and overwhelming. But once I was in that rabbit hole, I learned about what we can essentially refer to as black magic, the horrible things that negative spiritual entities do to try to invoke negative spirits to be a part of their reality. And that was pretty conclusive to me that this was going on. And the realization that there were people in power who did these kinds of things. Not everyone in power, obviously, does these kinds of things. But that there are people in power who do these kinds of things because they believe it increases their power over others, made me realize that black magic was real. But then I had the realization, if black magic was real, then white magic must be real. Because I grew up playing Final Fantasy, and I always liked playing a white mage. And so I understood that there was this duality of energies. So that was also a really important aspect of me, of odd circumstances and coincidences that prepared me to want these books, to be ready to receive these books in a way that was illuminating towards me and the life path that I wanted to go on. Because I just resonated with learning white magic and how to do those kinds of things. And if you've been around in the spiritual community for a while, back then there was like a pretty popular website. It was lightworkers.com or lightworkers.org. So that was the place that I spent a lot of time at, and learning about lightworking and stuff like that. So then when I saw the post about David Wilcock and the Law of One, then I was led to the Law of One specifically. And then I was like, oh, this is it. This is what I'm supposed to be doing, because it's what I've been doing now for 12 years, studying the Law of One. So that's my overshare about how I came to the Law of One, about how odd circumstances led to the next. I'm sure, like I said, most of you listening have very similar stories of just a lot of things going on that prepared you to receive this. And that's really how it happens. And while I did technically hear about it because somebody else was talking about the Law of One. They weren't selling the Law of One. They weren't saying, hey, these Law of One books are just amazing and everybody needs to read them. They were totally skeptical. It was just the words Law of One that set off a bell in my brain and made me then go looking further for this information. So your mind has to be prepared in whatever ways that you've decided through pre-incarnative decisions to prepare yourself if you get to that point in your life experience where you are prepared to receive that. And that's why advertising the books isn't really helpful. It isn't necessarily, it's counterintuitive because you think that you have to advertise these books. You think you have to advertise something for people to know about it, right? But this is beyond that. These books are something beyond tangible, graspable reality. And so finding them doesn't have to go in a normal way that you would expect, like you see a literal advertisement for the books, or somebody comes knocking on your door and asks, have you read The Good Word of Ra? Like, these things don't need to happen. It will find you if you're meant to find it. And again, we talk about this more, Ra talks about this more later, about how there are levels of vibration, and those who are able to use these books have a seniority of vibration. My guess is that typically means wanderer. Wanderers really use these books to penetrate the forgetting of what they've already learned and know from previous experience. Whereas most third density entities who haven't already gone through the experience of fourth and fifth and some of sixth density might not be able to integrate these teachings at the same level, the same usefulness. And so, yeah, that's my great big overshare on this first question. I appreciate you listening. I know sometimes people are curious about how other people find the Law of One, and that's my story. And like I said, once I found it, I was 100% sold, and I have not gone a day since without thinking about it and trying to apply some of its teachings to my experience and my understanding. So thank you to myself and to the Creator for bringing this to me and also giving me the understanding that advertising these books isn't really helpful. And so I hope you take that to heart. I have a article on my Substack, I'll go ahead and link it since I'm bringing it up, about why it doesn't really work to advertise the Law of One. Not even why you shouldn't, but why it doesn't work, because most people have a block against these things if they're not ready to receive it. So sometimes when we find the Law of One, we're so excited, we want to share it with everyone, we want to share it with our loved ones, we want to have deep conversations with the people we care about these concepts that we care about and are so important to us, but those people aren't always ready. And so you can't really just shake somebody into being ready to receive this knowledge, and it might not even ever be applicable to this life experience that they're in. So it's something that you have to do a lot of work in letting go and accepting, and yeah, that can be a process. So 8.1, I think it's important. Obviously, I just talked about it for a long time. And again, I think Ross says, consider the coincidences and odd circumstances by which one thing flowed to the next. Consider this well. So I think that's a good thing to meditate upon, about how your life experience has unfolded in a way that is useful to you. And it may not be useful to others, but the profundity of how everything has fallen and woven itself into you being in this present moment right now, where you're listening to a Law of One podcast and trying to apply these teachings to accelerate your evolution, to work in consciousness, to be a white magician. So now we're going to move on to 8.2. Dawn asks, there was a portion of the material yesterday, which I will read, where you said there is a certain amount of landing taking place. Some of these landings are of your peoples, some are of the entities known to you as the Group of Orion. My first question is, what did you mean by the landings are of your peoples? And again, this is something Dawn tried to ask in Session 7, and Ra was like, your mind and your words aren't syncing up together, we can't answer this question, so he's trying again to get this information, and Ra says, I am Ra. Your peoples have, at this time-space present, the technological achievement, if you would call it that, of being able to create and fly the shape and type of craft known to you as unidentified flying objects. Unfortunately for the social memory complex vibratory rate of your peoples, these devices are not intended for the service of mankind, but for potential destructive use. This further muddles the vibratory nexus of your social memory complex, causing a situation whereby neither of those oriented towards serving others, nor those oriented towards serving self, can gain the energy/power which opens the gates to intelligent infinity for the social memory complex. This, in turn, causes the harvest to be small. I find this question and answer very important too, and very sad. And it's the concept that UFOs have, because we have developed the technology and turned them into weapons, the idea, the concept, the sightings of UFOs, these things are not helpful to our social memory complex. They have slowed the potential of our social memory complex. UFOs have caused our harvest to be small, and that's because most of the UFOs that have ever been seen are just human technology that we have been told are UFOs, or that we believe are UFOs, because we can't grasp those technological potentials being available but hidden from our knowledge. And again, this is something Ra talks about later, about how these concepts lead to the talk of conspiracy theories. And here we go. We're going to get into conspiracy theories because we're talking about UFOs. And most people don't have just like a phase of conspiracy theories and then move on to deeper spiritual teachings. A lot of people get really stuck there and really obsessive about this hidden world, this hidden knowledge, the things that have been kept from us. And so UFOs have a much more harmful effect upon the collective than they do an illuminating effect on the collective. And I know that's counterintuitive, especially for people who have found this material and become illuminated because of their interest in UFOs. But again, later Ross says that this is a minority of peoples who go from UFOs to conspiracy theories to actual spiritual illumination. And most people don't get that far. So again, I find this to be super sad, super sad and super ironic and just hard to believe in a lot of ways. But that's what Ra is saying, is that because most of the UFOs we see are actually weapons created by our government, the cumulative effect of these UFO sightings is that our harvest is small. And it's one of the direct causes of the small harvest on our planet. So yeah, just something to think about if you hadn't realized that in your previous readings. So let's go on. I don't think we're going to perk up our this session, but we're going to get through it. 8.3, Don asks, are these craft that are of our peoples from what we call planes that are not incarnate at this time? Where are they based? So here's Don trying to wrap his mind around it. He thinks that Ra is talking about beings from the inner planes, that these are non-corporeal entities who have visited us in these crafts, but still humans who are not in physical bodies. But here Ra says, I am Ra. These of which we spoke are of third density and are part of the so-called military complex of various of your people's societal divisions or structures. The bases are varied. There are bases, as you would call them, undersea in your southern waters near the Bahamas, as well as in your Pacific seas in various places close to your Chilean borders on the water. There are bases upon your moon, as you call this satellite, which at this time are being reworked. There are bases which move about your lands. There are bases, if you would call them that, in your skies. These are the bases of your peoples, very numerous and, as we have said, potentially destructive. So here Ra's saying that our military has weapons, creation, bases, storage facilities all over, underwater, on the moon, mobile ones that can move over the land, and even ones in the sky. And so this gets more and more hard for Don to accept and integrate as we continue to go on. So 8.4, Don asks, where do the people who operate these craft come from? Are they affiliated with any nation on Earth? What is their source? And Ross says, these people come from the same place as you or I. They come from the Creator. As you intend the question, in its shallower aspect, these people are those in your and other selves' governments responsible for what you would term national security. Don asks, am I to understand then that the United States has these craft in undersea bases? And Ra says, I am Ra. You are correct. And then in 8.6, Don asks, how did the United States learn of the technology to build these land, and whatever Don says here is inaudible, I'm guessing, bases. And Ra responds and says, I am Ra. There was a mind-body-spirit complex known to your people by the vibratory sound complex Nikola. This entity departed the illusion, and the papers containing the necessary understandings were taken by mind-body-spirit complexes serving your security of national divisional complex. Thus, your people became privy to the basic technology. In the case of those mind-body-spirit complexes which you call Russians, the technology was given from one of the Confederation in an attempt, approximately 27 of your years ago, to share information and bring about peace among your peoples. The entities giving this information were in error, but we did many things at the end of this cycle in attempts to aid your harvest, from which we learned the folly of certain types of aid. This is a contributing factor to our more cautious approach at this date, even as the need is power upon power greater, and your people's call is greater and greater. So, Nikola Tesla was given a lot of information. He was able to receive lots of technological, amazing technological information. Later, Ross says that he was very naive and vulnerable, and when he died, then all of his papers were taken by the military, and then this technological information was used to create weapons. And also in Russia, Confederation entities, one of the Confederation, it says, tried to give a scientist there similar information, but it was again distorted. And they realize now that they made a mistake in doing that, even though they didn't see such strong negative potentials for having given this information. But now they recognize that they really need to step back from our social memory complex and meddling in our social memory complex, because most of the things that they've done have turned out bad. And in my opinion, one of the primary reasons for that is because Ra and probably other Confederation entities did not have the same money systems that we do here on Earth. And so I don't think they understood the depravity that comes from beings who just want to make money off of technology and to steal these things and to keep them and sell them. And so I think that's one of the big blind spots that the Confederation has had when they've been dealing with our social memory complex, is not really realizing how quickly money, the idea of large sums of money, can so thoroughly and quickly corrupt somebody. Yeah, so the Confederation gave us the technology to make UFOs, but our social memory complex, the negative beings in our social memory complex, decided to keep that information for themselves to create weapons, to sell, to intimidate other countries, and to just maintain a sense of power over others. So that's where we got the technology for our UFO weapons, is the Confederation. And in 8.7, Don asks, I'm puzzled by these craft that we have undersea bases for. They are inaudible. Is this technology sufficient to overshadow all other armaments? Do we have just the ability to fly in these craft? Or are there any weapons, like there are, were they given to us? Inaudible. Or are they just craft for transport? What is the basic mechanism of their inaudible? It's really hard to believe is what I'm saying. And obviously he's kind of spiraling a little bit. He's not speaking loud enough for the tape to hear him. And Ra says, I am Ra. The craft are perhaps misnamed in some instances. It would be more appropriate to consider them as weaponry. The energy used is that of the field of electromagnetic energy which polarizes the Earth sphere. The weaponry is of two basic kinds, that which is called by your peoples psychotronic, and that which is called by your peoples particle beam. The amount of destruction which is contained in this technology is considerable, and the weapons have been used in many cases to alter weather patterns and to enhance the vibratory change which engulfs your planet at this time. So, weather control is a common conspiracy theory that's talked about a lot. The fact is, there are a lot of countries out there that are not so secretive about their weather control programs. For instance, Dubai, being a desert land, often brags about its successful attempts at creating rain with technology. And so that's one thing Ross says that we've used this technology for, and you know, once you can manipulate the weather, you can use that as a weapon as well. You can create superstorms in small areas. That's from my personal understanding of this phenomenon. We have control over the weather in just very small cases. We can only control weather for a short period of time, and then we lose control over it. So in theory, though, we could create a superstorm over a small area and do a lot of damage via weather, which would be hard to trace back to any one particular aggressor, especially for most of the people who are affected. But then there are also the psychotronic weapons, which have been used to enhance the vibratory change which engulfs your planet at this time. And that would be things that affect our consciousness, that alter the way we think. And we can speculate forever on what those technological devices are and how they work. But this is what Ra says they have done with the technological information that has been given by the Confederation. So, question 8.8, Dawn asks, how have they been able to keep this a secret? Why aren't these craft in use for transport? So, I think one of the reasons Dawn has a big problem with integrating this is a bit of like maybe a Dunning-Kruger, where he believes that because he was in the army as a pilot, that he has almost complete knowledge of the aircraft that we use for weaponry in the military. But it's clear that, you know, he doesn't. And he is kind of blind to these potentials. And so it's just really interesting to watch him really struggle to grasp these things, especially because he was in the military. But I, like I said, I think he believes that he had a mostly complete knowledge in this arena. So Ra says, the governments of each of your societal division illusions desire to refrain from publicity so that the surprise may be retained in case of hostile action from what your peoples call enemies. So basically, we just want to keep this technology a secret. And so we can use it as a surprise attack. So they can't develop counter technology to this weaponry. And you know, a lot of the quote-unquote UFO sightings, again, going back to the last session, when Dawn was like, the Confederation has been advertising a lot with UFOs in the past 30 years. And Ra's like, no, a lot of those are your peoples. And these are the drones, etc., that our government had been creating as weapons. And in many cases, deliberately let people believe were UFOs, or believe might be UFOs, or at least put out there that they didn't know what was going on. What could be going on? Because that kept their secret better than just coming out and saying, hey, this is something that we did, you know? So I think this is something that, yeah, it was very hard for Dawn to realize and integrate. From this perspective here today, it's not so hard to imagine that that's what was going on, knowing a lot more in detail about the secrets and the machinations of our governments and our militaries and all the things that go on behind those closed doors in a bid for power over others. And especially since the U.S. is very much a global weapons manufacturer at this point. So in session 8.9, Dawn asks, how many of these craft does the United States have? I am Ra. The United States has 573 at this time. They are in the process of adding to this number. Don asks, what is the maximum speed of one of these craft? I am Ra. The maximum speed of these craft is equal to the Earth energy squared. This field varies. The limit is approximately one-half the light speed, as you would call it. This is due to imperfections in design. 8.11, Don asks, wouldn't this type of craft totally solve or come close to solving a lot of the energy problems as far as transport goes that we're used to transporting inaudible? And then he repeats, transporting inaudible. And Ra says, I am Ra. The technology your peoples possess at this time is capable of resolving each and every limitation which plagues your social memory complex at this present nexus of experience. However, the concerns of some of your beings, with distortions towards what you would call powerful energy, cause these solutions to be withheld until the solutions are so needed that those with the distortion can then become further distorted in the direction of power. So, this one's a little hopeful. I find it a little hopeful. The technology your peoples possess at this time is capable of resolving each and every limitation which plagues your social memory complex at this present nexus of experience. Of course, we're over 40 years beyond that present nexus, but I still feel like a lot of our problems are the same on a greater scale, essentially. We don't have a ton of new problems that have come about in these past 40 years. They've just been intensifying. So, in theory, we have a lot of technology that could solve our problems. However, beings are withholding this power until it can give them the most power. And again, I think of this a lot along the lines of profit. Beings are waiting until they can maximize their profit from releasing this technology when we need it so bad that we're willing to pay anything to have these problems fixed. I think that's one of the ways that we are withholding, that negative beings are withholding technology from us. One of the reasons. So, 8.12, Don asks, at the time you mentioned that some of the landings were of our peoples, you also mentioned that some were of the Orion group. We talked a little about the Orion group, but why do the Orion group land here? What is their purpose? I am Ra. Their purpose is conquest. Unlike those of the Confederation who wait for the calling, the so-called Orion group calls itself to conquest. So Don asks, specifically, what do they do when they land? And Ra says, there are two types of landings. The first, entities among your peoples are taken on their craft and programmed for future use. There are two or three levels of programming. First, the level that will be discovered by those who do research. Second, a triggering program. Third, a second and most deep triggering program, crystallizing the entity, thereby rendering it lifeless and useful as a kind of beacon. This is a form of landing. The second form is that of landing beneath the Earth's crust, which is entered from water. Again, in the general area of your South American and Caribbean areas and close to the so-called Northern Pole. The bases of these people are underground. So, I think the thing that I want to point out from that last one is, Ra says, first, the level of programming that will be discovered by those who do research. I think Ra is specifically talking about Don, to Don, saying that you've seen this type of programming because you've researched the type of programming that happens by Orion entities coming and landing because you've been researching UFOs for so long. And then there are other programming that happens, and I honestly don't know what it even means to have a deep triggering program that crystallizes the entity, thereby rendering it lifeless and useful as a kind of beacon. I just don't even know what that means, but that's something that the Orion group do when they come and meddle with Earthlings, and then they also are involved in these underground bases with weaponry that our social memory complex, the human people on our planet have made. They're also involved in that, so 8.14, Don asks, what do the Orion group have? What's the objective with respect to the conquest of the Orion group? I am Ra. As we have said previously, their objective is to locate certain mind-body-spirit complexes which vibrate in resonance with their own vibrational complex, then to enslave the unelite, as you may call those who are not of the Orion vibration. So they come, they try to find people who are polarized negative and have the distortion towards power and maybe have already accumulated some of that power over our social memory complex. And then they fuel those distortions with more ideas of how to enslave the rest of us. That's what Orion's doing here. They want to infringe upon our free will and gain some of the vicarious power that is created when infringement happens in that way. So in A15, Dawn asks, was the landing at Pascagoula in 1973 when Charlie Hickson was taken on board this type of landing? I am Ra. The landing of which you speak was what you would call an anomaly. It was neither the Orion influence nor our peoples in thought form, but rather a planetary entity of your own vibration which came through quarantine in all innocence in a random landing. And I'm just going to read these ones about Charlie Hickson here. 816 Dawn asks, what did they do to Charlie Hickson when they took him on board? I am Ra. They used his mind-body-spirit complex's life experience, concentrating upon the experience of the complexes of what you call war. Dawn asks, how did they use them? I am Ra. The use of experience is to learn. Consider a race who watches a movie. It experiences a story and identifies with the feelings, perceptions, and experiences of the hero. Questioner, was Charlie Hickson originally of the same social memory complex as the ones who picked him up? I am Ra. The entity of vibratory sound complex did not have a connection with those who used him. Dawn asks, did those who used him use his war experiences to learn more of the Law of One? I am Ra. This is correct. Now we're at 820. Dawn's still asking about Charlie Hickson. Were the entities that picked him, can you describe, is that the normal configuration of these entities? They, inaudible, rather unusual. I am Ra. The configuration of their beings is their normal configuration. The unusualness is not remarkable. We ourselves, when we chose a mission among your peoples, needed to study your peoples, for had we arrived in no other form than our own, we would have been perceived as light. Dawn asks, well, what density did the entities who picked up Charlie Hickson come from? What was their density? Ra already said this. I am Ra. The entities in whom you show such interest are third density beings of a fairly high order. We should express the understanding to you that these entities would not have used the mind-body-spirit complex, Charlie, except for the resolve of this entity before incarnation to be of service. Questioner, what was the home or origin of the entities that took Charlie? I am Ra. These entities are of the Sirius Galaxy. So, the Charlie Hickson case. This is something that Dawn actually talks about in his Secrets of the UFO. He had studied this. It obviously is one of the most gripping ones that he really wanted to ask Ra about. Some entities from Sirius came, took Charlie on board, scanned his mind for memories of his experience in war. Ra later says in session 38 or so that these beings were actually trees who had evolved from second into third density. And this is why they had to study the bellicosity that Charlie experienced by reading his mind, because they didn't have any of that in their own native experience. But they were still third density. They had just gained the technological achievement to travel here from Sirius and randomly found a window in the quarantine and found a being who was willing to be of service subconsciously, pre-incarnatively, and took him aboard and scanned him. I'm going to go ahead and read the excerpt from Secrets of the UFO. It's just a few paragraphs of the Charlie Hickson event, his close encounter, and it goes like this. Charlie Hickson, age 45, and 18-year-old Calvin Parker were fishing when an oblong blue-gray craft, 35 to 40 feet long, descended and hovered near them. The craft made a zipping noise. A door appeared in the craft, and three humanoids, or robots, came out and approached the two men. Like their craft, these entities did not touch the ground but moved just above it, proceeding without moving their legs. The entities were short and had elephant hide skin, slits for eyes, and pincer-like hands. When Parker saw the entity's approach, he passed out. Hickson was paralyzed, but was able to continue observing what happened. Two of the entities picked up Hickson by his arms and carried him inside the ship. When he was picked up, Hickson lost all feeling, including that of weight. He was taken to a bare, brightly lit room. He could not see where the light came from. The entities placed him in a reclining position, still floating in air, and an eye-like instrument scanned back and forth across his body with thoroughness, as if it were examining or photographing him. This episode lasted somewhere between 15 and 40 minutes. Hickson is not at all sure about the time. After the examination was over, the entities left Hickson alone for a while, and then floated him back to where they had picked him up on the riverbank. About an hour later, the two shaken fishermen went to the sheriff's office to report their story. They were interrogated exhaustively, and afterwards were left alone in a bugged room. The recording of their conversation at that time reveals that both men were quite frightened by their experience, the emotional trauma having been so great to Parker that, after Hickson left the room, he began to pray. Ultimately, he suffered a nervous breakdown as a result of this experience. Hickson, though plagued with nightmares and continuing feelings of terror about the experience, came through it better and was able to work with investigators who wished to ascertain the truth about his experience. A 2.5-hour lie detector test given by a highly skeptical polygraph operator revealed that Hickson was telling the truth. When Dr. Harder used the technique of time regression hypnosis on Hickson, he too felt that Hickson was telling the truth about the experience, for he said, quote, "A strong feeling of terror is practically impossible to fake under hypnosis," end quote. So that's a pretty typical encounter with an extraterrestrial species based on the Secrets of the UFO book. Stan has several of them listed. These events happen and you don't really come back from them when something this mind-breaking of your reality happens to you. It's really hard to remain integrated in your life experience. And this is one of the reasons, and Raul will here go on to say it, this is one of the reasons why they don't do this. This is why the Confederation doesn't do this. Because it can really agitate somebody and the usefulness of their experiential nexus. And the whole point of incarnating is to have this elaborate experience of a variety of experiences throughout your whole incarnation, building upon itself, learning and growing and expanding. But when something like this happens, it just sort of arrests the whole process. And that's an infringement. That's taking away the free will of the being who just wanted to live a human life in a quote-unquote relatively normal way. So, yeah, I find that interesting. Again, I recommend Secrets of the UFO because it does really have a lot of stories just like that where people do not come back from these events. And again, it's pretty sad. So we'll go on to the next one here. Dawn doubles back in 8.23 and says, "The most startling information that you've given me, which I must admit I'm having difficulty believing, is that the United States has 573 craft like you describe. How many people in our government are aware that we have these? How many total people of United States designation are aware of this, including those who operate the craft? I am Ra. The number of your people varies, for there are needs to communicate at this particular time nexus so that the number is expanding at this time. The approximate number is 1500. It is only approximate, for as your illusory time-space continuum moves from present to present at this nexus, many are learning." And Don asks, "Where are these craft constructed?" Ra says, "These craft are constructed one by one in two locations, in the desert or arid regions of your so-called New Mexico, and in the desert or arid regions of your so-called Mexico, both installations being under the ground." Questioner, "Did you say that the United States actually has a manufacturing plant in Mexico?" I am Ra. I spoke thusly. May I, at this time, reiterate that this type of information is very shallow and of no particular consequence compared to the study of the Law of One. However, we carefully watch these developments in hopes that your peoples are able to be harvested in peace. Questioner, I am totally aware how this line of questioning is of no consequence at all, but this particular information is so startling to me that it makes me question your validity on this. Up until this point, I was in agreement with everything. This is very startling, and it does not seem possible that this secret could have been kept 27 years, and that we are operating these craft. I apologize for my attitude, but I thought I would be very honest about this. It is unbelievable to me that we would operate a plant in Mexico, outside of the United States, to build these craft. Maybe I'm mistaken. These craft are physical craft built by our physical people? I could go get in one and ride in one, is that correct? I am Ra. This is incorrect. You could not ride one. The United States, as you call your societal divisional complex, creates these as a type of weapon. And, I mean, I personally here, in the year of our Lord 2025, find it quite quaint that Dawn is in such disbelief that we might have a military installation in Mexico. I mean, we have more military, we have military installations in more countries than we don't have military installations in countries, you know? We have so many military bases all over the world. The idea that we told the Mexican government, as Ra explains here, that we were, and in the next couple questions, that we were doing bacteriological warfare, that that's what we were studying, and then instead built UFO drone weapons, is just so mind-blowing to Dawn. And I don't know about you, but to me it doesn't seem implausible on any level. It seems perfectly plausible. But again, Dawn is very much struggling in this session. He's having a very hard time with all of this new information that totally is breaking his reality. He's having that experience where he's having revelations that don't fit into his worldview, that don't fit into the worldview that he's become comfortable in. Despite his awareness and study and knowledge of UFOs, all of this is very shocking and unsettling to him. So Dawn asks in 8.27, there are no occupants then, no pilot, shall I say? And Ra says, I am Ra, this is correct. Dawn asks, how are they controlled? I am Ra, they are controlled by computer from a remote source of data. So, again, they're essentially drones. There's nobody in most of these weapons. They're piloted remotely. And then Dawn asks, why do we have a plant in Mexico? I am Ra. The necessity is both for dryness of the ground and for a near-total lack of population. Therefore, your so-called government and the so-called government of your neighboring geographical vicinity arranged for an underground installation. The government officials who agreed did not know the use to which their land would be put, but thought it a governmental research installation for use in what you would call bacteriological warfare. Now, personally to me, I might be as a leader of, how does Ra put it? As a leader of the government of our neighboring geographical vicinity would find bacteriological warfare almost more scary than building drones, because it just seems like a lot more could go wrong in bacteriological warfare research and having that done in my own country. But again, that's my own unsettling feelings about this line of discussion. But apparently that was more acceptable. I guess, you know, wherever it is in Mexico, there must not be anybody who lives around that area. So they must have thought that it would be relatively safe to do this kind of research there. And I'm sure we gave them enough money to ease their worries and fears about what might go wrong. So 8:30, Dawn asks, is this the type of craft that Dan Fry was transported in? And Ra says, I am Ra. The one known as Daniel was, in thought form, transported by Confederation thought form vehicular illusion in order to give this mind-body-spirit complex data so that we might see how this type of contact aided your people in the uncovering of the intelligent infinity behind the illusion of limits. So this particular contactee, Dan Fry, was contacted by Confederation. However, it was a thought form illusion that he experienced that seemed very real to him. And a Confederation entity named Alon spoke to him and took him on, quote unquote, took him on board his craft, flew him over New York City, taught him a bunch of stuff. He was a engineer, a rocketry researcher, something like that. I did a little bit of reading before I started this session. He has a website where he has detailed descriptions of what happened to him. He ended up creating, like, it's referred to as a type of UFO religion, but he didn't see it that way. It was more of him just trying to disseminate the knowledge that he acquired through this experience, and to help people become more aware of the wider version of reality. But yeah, you can read about his experience in much more detail than what it isn't specifically in the Secrets of the UFO, like the Charlie Hickson one was, but I'll see if I can find the link that I read earlier again, and I'll put that in the description too, so you can read about Dan Fry's experience, because it's pretty interesting, especially if you consider that it was Confederation who did this. And it's pretty cute, the conversation that he had with this Confederation entity. It's cute. So, 8.31, Don asks, would it be possible for any of us to have some type of contact with the Confederation in a more direct way? And Ra says, I am Ra. In observing the distortions of those who underwent this experiential sequence, we decided to gradually back off, shall I say, from direct contact in thought form. The least distortion seems to be available in mind-to-mind communication. Therefore, the request to be taken aboard is not one we care to comply with. You are most valuable in your present orientation. So again, this is what I was talking about before, when the Confederation realized, and including with Dan Fry, it seems like he went through his experience the rest of his life in a somewhat intact way, but apparently the distortions it caused still were too much for the Confederation to accept as worth the interference caused by inducing such a thought form experience that seemed so real and tangible in a human being. So they have backed off from those kinds of physical contact, those apparent physical contact with humans. They prefer just mind-to-mind telepathic communication, and obviously, like, channeling, as they do. And so they say, you are most valuable in your present orientation. So, you know, one thing that they talk about, that Dan Fry talks about in his experience, is how they told him he was receptive enough to be able to accept what they were saying and to change his mind, and that they looked long and hard for a science-minded person that they could contact and offer this information to. But most people are much better at projecting thoughts than receiving new thoughts. And that's just how the human brain is configured most of the time. So my guess is that these receptive humans of the variety that the Confederation would even be able to contact are more useful in their configuration and just receiving these thoughts telepathically instead of having these fantastical visions that totally break their reality in a forceful way. So again, it has to do with free will. They want to protect our free will, and it's hard to have an experience like that and then not talk about it. So not only is the contactee's free will infringed upon via this event, the people that they go on to talk to might have free will infringement, because they're exposing them to these events that they didn't personally have any hand in, but they're so sure. And even if they aren't believed, it's still just an agitation that's caused as a ripple effect around those who are contacted. So the Confederation isn't going to do that. They're not going to even give us a thought form ride on their spaceship. Maybe in a dream, maybe in something like that, where it isn't as, where there's still a suspension of disbelief of the reality of what happens. But they keep their distance. They've meddled enough. They've learned their lesson in meddling with humans. So 8.32, Don asks, the reason that I have questioned you so much upon the craft which you say the United States government operates is that if we include this in the book, it will create numerous problems. It is something that I am considering leaving out of the book entirely, or I'm going to have to question you in considerable detail about it. It's difficult to even question in this area, but I would like to maybe ask a few more questions about it with still the possible option of leaving it out of the book. What are the diameter of these craft, the United States? The rest of the question is inaudible. I am Ra. I suggest that this be the last question for this session. We will speak as you deem fit in further sessions, asking you to be guided by your own discernment only. The approximate diameter, given several model changes, is 23 of your feet as you measure. May we ask at this time if you have a needed short query before we end this session? So, all of this stuff about the UFOs and stuff was left out of the original books. On lawofone.info, it shows you, you can have it toggled on to show you which questions were omitted from the original printing, so you can see that's where I'm reading it now. You can see the blacked out background in the boxes that show which questions Don decided not to print. And he did decide to leave all of this conspiracy stuff out of the original books. He does continue to question a little bit more in the upcoming sessions, but he is guided by his discernment to not go too far with this line of questioning and to try to focus more on the Law of One. So in 8.33, Don asks, is there anything that we can do to make the instrument more comfortable? I am Ra. The instrument is well balanced. It is possible to make small corrections in the configuration of the spine of the instrument that it be straighter. Continue also to carefully monitor the placement and orientation of the symbols used. This particular session, the sensor is slightly off, and therefore, the instrument will experience a slight discomfort. And Don asks, is the sensor off with respect to the angle or with respect to lateral displacement? And Ra says, there is an approximate 3-degree displacement from proper perpendicularity. I am Ra. I leave you in the love and the light of the one infinite creator. Go forth, therefore, rejoicing in the power and the peace of the one creator. Adonai. So here Don asks about how to, you know, keep the instrument, protect the instrument. And Ra says that the sensor is slightly off, and therefore the instrument will experience a slight discomfort. And it took them a few more sessions from this one to realize that when Ra is talking about the appurtenances, that what they're really talking about is the alignment of the mind complexes of the group. And so this almost makes me think that each object was representative of each individual person, but I don't know. But the sensor is slightly off. Makes me think that maybe that they were pointing a finger towards Don. That might have been their communication. I don't know. I'll continue looking at that as we go on to see if that makes any sense. But I think what's important is they say that the instrument will experience a slight discomfort. So what is happening is when Don isn't questioning Ra properly, this means that Carla's bearing more of a physical, that the session has taken more of a physical toll on Carla, because she bears the brunt of all of this, because she's channeling this narrow band through her body complex. So when Don deviates from this narrow band of communications that Ra is actually here to talk about, this affects Carla's body physically. So luckily Don realizes this soon enough and reorients so that it doesn't wear Carla out even quicker. But it's just such a huge burden that Don has to make sure that he's asking the right questions, because if he doesn't, then Carla suffers. Carla suffers physically. So yeah, we made it through that session. I was struggling to gain the grit to come talk about this one, because it is very, I don't want to say off topic. Obviously, it's off topic from what Ra wants to talk about. It's off topic from what I want to talk about. I'm not really super interested in the UFO stuff or the conspiracy stuff or any of that. I really am more interested in the ways that we can evolve our consciousness. There's still really good, important things that Ra says, because Ra makes sure to maximize every answer that they give to still be relevant to the question, but also give other information to help expand our minds around these concepts. So again, there's very important stuff in this session. There's very objectively unimportant stuff in this session. But again, Don was very curious then, in the context of his studies, certain events that he had studied, what they meant, who was involved, and that's understandable, right? That's very understandable. Don had done so much learning and had so many experiences that he brought to the table that prepared him for this, and he struggled to stay on track sometimes. That's okay. I'm not blaming Don for anything. He obviously did the best that he could in every given session. So, yeah, that was session 8. Thank you very much for listening again. I hope there was some useful stuff here, and I hope I was able to offer a greater potential understanding of this conversation. And again, if you have any other questions or comments or anything you want to say to me, I'm open to hear it. And I'll go ahead and put some links in the description that were relevant to this session that I talked about. And I will get to session 9 as soon as possible. I'm thinking about maybe recording the Substack article that I did about UFOs and or the one that I mentioned about why it doesn't work to advertise the Law of One. I think those are pretty relevant at this point in the session, but I'm kind of saving the reading the scripts essentially that I already have for days when I don't have the energy, when I have the time and space to record but not the mental energy to dive deep into what Ra is saying. Some days I might just feel like reading off what I've already written. So those will probably be recorded sometime soon, maybe, but I also might do session 9 next. I have no promises, but I will keep recording and I will keep putting stuff out here for people to listen to and hopefully learn a little bit from. So thank you to everyone who's listening, and I appreciate all of the positive feedback and encouragement that I've gotten so far. You're really kind and generous to say things like that. And yeah, I look forward to next time, and I hope you do as well.